Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Stuart Cranes. You are listening to Your Inside Track to Success. And before we dive in and introduce today's guest, please go ahead, like, subscribe. I know you're going to get a lot of value out of today's conversation, so please share with somebody. There is no cost of admission to this show, but sharing the information that you're getting, sharing the aha, sharing the value that you're receiving helps us grow the show, gets it in front of more people, and quite honestly, just supports others in creating the lives of their dreams, which is what this show is all about. So today's guest is somebody that has been a very influential part of my life for several years now. She is a small business coach. She is an energy worker. She is also just an amazing coach overall and has done an amazing job over the years, pulling, you know, my head out of my butt from time to time when I've needed it. And so as someone who has been a mentor figure in my life, I wanted to have her on the show. So Ariana Ulloa Olavarrieta, thank you for being here. I hope I got it. I love your last name. It's beautiful. And it's just one that I have always struggled to get right. Could you do it one time for the audience?
Did it perfect. You did it perfect. Ulloa Olavarrieta.
Oh, I love that. So I would love to kind of kick off this conversation. I know that you work with small businesses, with local entrepreneurs, helping them get their businesses up off the ground. And most of the people that listen to this show have dreams, have goals, have ideas often for businesses, and they don't know where to start. So how did you get started doing the work you're doing? And we'll go from there.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here. So I started my journey of supporting small businesses as a banker. When I graduated college, I went to work for a large bank, bounced around a few different positions, but ultimately was supporting small businesses in the financial piece of their business. And I loved the aspect of being a partner with them. You know, it was just starting off as far as making sure that they had the right products and services financially to, you know, be successful. And then it kind of grew into clients reaching out to me to ask for my opinion on things that we're looking to do in their business. You know, if they were looking to branch out, if they were looking to reduce costs. And over time, I realized that that was my favorite piece of it, you know, not so much the sales. And so I got the opportunity to jump into a pilot program. It was through the Small Business Development Centers. It's a national organization, and they were looking to pilot a Latino center specifically here in Ohio. And so they asked me if I was interested, and I didn't, when I applied for the job, I didn't really think I was going to get it. And, you know, I waddled into the interview 7 months pregnant and talked through like my vision for what I wanted to do for, of course, you know, Latinos in our community, but also anyone, because yes, we were the Latino Small Business Development Center, and anyone could walk through our door and we would support them with services, with one-on-one consulting, with connections to the community, you know, if they need an attorney, if they need a CPA. And so that moment was really what got me on track, you know, to do small business coaching. And since then, 15 years ago, some aspect of my job has been the one-on-one piece because it's my favorite. It's to be in the journey with an entrepreneur as far as what's working, what's not working, figuring out what lights them up and what else they could do in their community is what I love. You know, like it's living the American dream. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Here's a question for you. With all of the I think media coverage of the economy, the inflation being what it is in this day and age, and I think families may be feeling the squeeze more than ever, you know, at any point in our history. Speaking of the American dream, in your opinion, is it dead, or is it just something that we get to work harder to achieve?
Yeah, it's never dead. I always love to say that our country is built, you know, is thriving because of the small businesses. Like, yes, the large corporations, the large businesses are absolutely necessary, but those large businesses are at some point turning to the small businesses that in order to be their suppliers, in order to be their mm-hmm. providers, you know? And so that will never die. Small business is a key part to our economy. And so, yes, right now things are definitely more expensive. Life is more expensive than what it was a couple of years ago. And I think that's what makes it the perfect time. If folks are thinking about starting a small business, this is the time to do it. Because ultimately, you know, we all want to diversify our income so that, yes, we have our full-time job. And regardless if it's something that you love, like I love my job. I love what I do. And I have different streams of income because, you know, just because I love my job doesn't mean that's the only thing I love in life. So what else am I passionate about that I could make money off of, like here and here, and so that if one of those streams of income go away, you still have other things that you're working with. And so, you know, it's never a bad time to start. Yes, it might be slightly more expensive to start it now than it would have been, you know, when interest rates were much lower, but mm-hmm. it's also not impossible. And get started, you know, dip your toe. If you don't want to dip your entire foot, dip your toe in the water to see what's possible. Because whatever it is that you want to create, there may be a need for it outside of your friends and family. Like I always tell clients, you know, you make the best cookies in the world. Great. Is that just coming from your kids and your mom telling you that like you're amazing? Great. And do other people outside of your, you know, immediate circle of influence think that your cookies are amazing, right? So that you're able to sell them and have people buy them consistently, not just like a one time to be nice, but they're like, yeah, I'd buy these for birthday parties, for whatever, for, you know, like they're good. They're, you know, I'm willing to pay the price that you're selling them to me for. You know, and I'm willing to do it often, or, you know, at least more than once.
Yeah. Now, thank you for shedding your insight on that. And I think a natural follow-up is, given the current state of things, say I'm somebody, I have a clear idea. Let's just say I have a product I want to sell. Mm-hmm. What are the first steps I need to be taking to get my business idea off of the ground, to your point? So it's more than just a side hustle, but is actually something that can create a lot of income.
Yeah. So flesh it out, flesh the idea out so that we know that it's so that you can be clear that it's a product or service that people are going to be willing to purchase often, you know, or at least more than once. There are, you know, we are very lucky in this country to have quite a few resources that are available to us to start our businesses for free. There aren't grants. Like I am always the bearer of bad news for entrepreneurs. There aren't really grants out there to start your business. Unless you're agricultural or super high tech. Ultimately, you're going to get to invest in your own idea. But before you invest in it, you know, going to one of the amazing resources that exist in the country in order to flush it out. You know, I mean, you could launch it. You could launch your cookie stand and see if people purchase it. And I personally would suggest before you launch it, there's an organization called the Small Business Development Center. They are all over the country. I can send you the website afterwards for your viewers, for your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
But it's a free resource and they are all over the country. And so you would just type in your zip code and it would give you the closest location. But what the Small Business Development Centers do is they provide free one-on-one consulting for anyone that is looking to either start their business or for those of you that have already launched and are looking for guidance, because entrepreneurship can be quite lonely. They also support with existing businesses and like what is it going to take to get you to that next level of your business? You know, are you looking to diversify, looking to decrease your expenses, looking to branch out into something else, either like a second location or a new product or service? What will that take? And so they will support you in like coming with the idea and then talking through it. So, you know, first and foremost, what is it going to take to launch your business? Because we always say that it's going to take longer than you think, and it's going to cost more than you expect, which is not fantastic news, but it's also, right, it's the reality. And so thinking through, depending on the type of business you want to start, is it seasonal? Is it something that you can do year round? Can you do it on the side? You know, is it something that you can do on your own, like a one person shop, or are you going to need to hire people in order to get it up and running? And so talking through all the different aspects of what are you going to have to worry about for taxes if you get to hire employees? Who's your target market? You know, outside of your mom and kids who love your cookies, who is going to purchase your product, right? And so, but like, tell me exactly who that is. When my sisters and I had an organic baby food company a while back, and people would come to us and say, oh, you're Mexican, so like you must be super popular with the Latino community with the product that you're selling. And people are always surprised by our answer, but it was like, no, actually the Latino population, they're not our target market. Our target market, because we were 3 times more expensive than Gerber, our target market was dual income household, which like 13 years ago ish, 12 years ago, they were making at least 150,000. And when we were only selling in Columbus, we had specific suburbs that we knew those people lived in those suburbs based on what they needed to make. They needed to care about organic because they needed to be able to afford and be willing to pay, you know, 3 times more than Gerber. And the majority of the Latino community with babies did what we did, which was either purchase Gerber for 99 cents or you made your own food. And so if you didn't have time to make it, you would be willing to pay that price. But it was, we were very specific as to who our target market was so that we weren't wasting time, money, effort on trying to sell. Like we wouldn't be spending time and money selling in the Latino community because, I mean, yes, we could have probably gotten some people to purchase it, but not the large amount that we needed in order to get this business up and running. And so that's always the question that I ask clients, like, who's your target market? Don't tell me that everyone is, because there's not a single product on the planet where everyone is your target market, because that's not true. Like even with water, not everyone buys the same type of water. Everyone has like their favorite water, what, you know, whether it's like Costco, 25 cent from the machine all the way up to like, I mean, now they have like all types of water, right? They're like $5 a pop and everything in between. And so if water can be that diverse, like you get to be crystal clear so that you're maximizing, you know, it takes money to start a business. And so if you're going to be using your money to launch, you want to maximize how far it's going to go. And so it's being clear as to who your market is and knowing that it could potentially change, but having a clear idea at least to launch and then being open to shifting, you know, as necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you for sharing all of that. And, you know, you did just speak a little bit into some of the pitfalls or maybe hidden challenges, I would say, of entrepreneurialism. I know you spoke a little bit about the loneliness, but I have learned in my own pursuit of building my coaching business, developing a base of clientele, so on and so forth, that you are essentially signing up for one heck of a personal development program that has unlimited upside, but you're blessed to always be responsible to and answering to yourself as to why things don't get done. And I'm wondering if from a pure like psychological checking in on yourself standpoint, what you think are the biggest things that people overlook when they're looking to start a business?
I mean, how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost. Back at the SBDC, we had like a spreadsheet that we would have clients fill out so that in a perfect world, they had in savings or accessible to them 3 months of expenses in order to, once the business was up and running, and also what it was going to take to start the business. So 3 months of expenses, startup funds. People always underestimate how much it's going to cost to get it up and running. And then, you know, let's say they were like, oh, I think I could do it with 20 grand and it's actually going to take 30, but you've already gone to the bank and gotten the $20,000 loan. You can't go back and be like, just kidding. It really meant 30. Like you're done. Like that's it. You're going to have to figure it out with 20. And so that to me is always the money piece is always key. And so looking at what you think it's going to take to launch and adding some type of cushion, because there's always going to be, because it takes longer than you think, because you're the only one that's in a hurry. No one else, like people, like if you're looking to like build a brick and mortar, the contractors, the landlord, no one's in a hurry for you to open. Like you're the only one. And so you get to take that into consideration as to making sure that you're fitting into other people's schedules. But it, so it's, you know, because it's going to take longer, you're going to need to set aside some of that money for unforeseen expenses. Because the hardest part, the easiest part of having a business is starting it. Starting it, I mean, and it's not easy to start, but it's the easiest piece, because then it's, once you're up and running, it's keeping it going. Right? Like how are you going to consistently bring in income so that you can pay your expenses, so that you can pay yourself and keep going month after month after month? And as you grow, what does that look like? And so in order to have the best chance of success, you get to launch like with a solid foundation. And so, you know, and speaking to a little bit what we talked about, like the loneliness of it, it's surrounding yourself with people that have either been through it or are in it, so that, because no one really understands entrepreneurship if, you know, except other entrepreneurs. Right. You know, I as a banker had a solid idea as to what that meant, but it wasn't until my sisters and I were in business and paying employees first before paying ourselves that we really had an understanding. It's just different, right? Like one is book knowledge and the other is in it, you know, being crystal clear as to what it's going to take, and sometimes not having the answers, but getting to decide things that are going to ultimately, you know, like determine where your business is going to go, you know, both good and bad. And so for me, it's always been super important to surround myself with people that, even if it's just a listening ear, to say, this is what I'm experiencing. I'm frustrated. I'm scared. I'm excited. What are the blind spots? What blind spots am I not seeing that maybe you can see so that I have the best chance of success, you know? And so it's, I've always suggested to clients, you know, surround yourself with almost like an advisory council. Have a CPA on hand that's going to, I mean, taxes are key. Like, you can't even get out of paying taxes through death. So make sure that your taxes are current at all times. So have a solid either CPA or bookkeeper. Have an attorney on hand that will be able to support you with any type of legal questions, you know, so that no one wants to pay the attorney up front and you don't want to be in issues because you were like too cheap to pay for an attorney and did it yourself at the beginning. And then you have all these like loopholes in your contracts. And then a business advisor and then other entrepreneurs, you know, like that. And so if you can get them in a room, you know, quarterly, semi-annually, even annually, to touch base with them on like, this is what I'm seeing in my business. What are my blind spots? What am I not seeing? What do you suggest? You know, and also, and that's why there are so many like entrepreneur networking groups, because it's important. It's important to surround yourself with people that are going through not necessarily the same thing, but ultimately like the same journey so that you can, you know, support each other through it.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe a follow-up to that, you know, you just described all of the things to consider, think about, be prepared for, and some really great, great ideas and I think action items people can take to put themselves in the best possible position to win. My question is, of course, there's a point where people are going to keep trying to check all the boxes and never actually get started. So what's the dichotomy between getting started, just going all in, like no matter what, make it happen, and also laying the groundwork? And what's the balance to strike there?
Folks constantly talk about a business plan and like, you must have a business plan in order to launch. I mean, and there are all different types of business plans, right? Like there's like the 50-page dissertation that nobody but you will ever read. And there's also tools like Business Model Canvas that essentially is like a one pager where you're putting bullet points as to who your target market is, what are your expenses, what are your revenue streams, and everything in between. For different people, they want like their comfort zone is going to be some one of those things, right? And anything in between. The 50-page dissertation and the one-page bullet point business plan. But I think it's key to have the business plan, whatever type of business plan you want to create, because ultimately the business plan is not for anyone else except for you. Writing the business plan forces you to think through all of the different aspects that it's going to take to launch your business. So if you're doing it alongside someone that's guiding you, you're thinking through, oh, I'm going to have to set aside X percent for taxes. If I have employees, this is what I have to do. Who is my target market? You know, what is it going to take for me to grow? How much is it going to cost? How long will it take to launch? And so having that business plan, I think, is step one. From there, then that gives you information on how much. And ultimately the business plan, like the budget piece, it's an estimated best guess and it's still a guess. So you think it's going to cost you $20,000. And then, you know, at that point you get, you know, whether you have it in savings, whether you're able to get some type of loan in order to launch, everything is a gamble. But at some point you get to launch to figure out, you know, what's working, what's not working, so that you can continue to pivot. I don't know of a single business that has ever launched where what their vision, their initial vision for their business ended up being their actual reality of the business, right? Like it always shifts because of so many different factors. And like what you think people need may not actually be what they want. And if you're able to continue to pivot, then ultimately now you're providing them what they do want and making money. But it's a balance of having it, the information that you need to have your best possible chance at success. And then at some point it is just, you know, making that jump, like leaping off of the cliff and hoping that you have, you know, you've created the wings in order to fly. And it's going to be bumpy, but like making sure that you have a clear vision as to what it is that you're creating. And then again, having that support system in place, because it's not just launching, it's the continuous support that you're going to be experiencing where, right, like the pandemic, of course, no one knew that was ever going to be a possibility. And the businesses that survived were the ones that, like, for example, as soon as the pandemic shut everything down, all the businesses that were able to pivot quickly to online, to delivery, to making it work in the long term, those are the ones that made it through the pandemic. Like the ones that were slower to shift were kind of left behind. And so, you know, it's knowing when you launch or jump, it's not gonna, like being at peace with, it's not gonna necessarily look like what you've written out, what you've painstakingly written out on your business plan as to what your business is gonna look like. It's just, it won't look that way. And being at peace with that and knowing that you're going to be shifting it and being ready for that. And so, ultimately risking, right? Like entrepreneurship is a risk. No matter how planned out you have it, at the end of the day, it's still a risk that you're taking.
Yeah. And it's definitely also just a parable of life. Like if we want anything, like a relationship, you get to put yourself out there. If you want to, you know, have a stronger relationship with your family, you get to show up a certain way. And it often comes back to trust, I find, no matter what the goal is trusting that the actions we are going to take are going to be rewarded in the way that we want them to be, hope they will be, whether for entrepreneurs, it's probably a combination of financial gain and also impact as well.
Yeah.
Something you mentioned that I thought was fascinating that I want to go back to is the idea that the initial intent of the business can shift over time. Mm-hmm. And as I go through with my coaching clients, this happens all the time with goals. Mm-hmm. Set a goal, go for it. They're going for it with everything that they can. And it just no longer feels aligned or due to necessity gets to shift. And yeah. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that process? And what's the difference between shifting a business or shifting any goal really and choosing to just quit it outright?
Working with the businesses that I have, some have shifted from, you know, there's like, for example, I have a client who makes gourmet pops, like popsicles.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, and, you know, what they've gotten to shift is, you know, here in Ohio, you can only really sell for a specific time of the year. And so what is possible outside of that time? You know, so like in dead of winter, what else is possible? And so it's been like while they've grown the Pops piece, what else has been possible in the downtime, you know, so that it's not necessarily downtime. And when they first started, it was definitely downtime, but as they've grown, you know, they've been able to pick up other events that will support them. And it wasn't necessarily what they envisioned at the beginning, but, you know, because they could have also decided, you know, kind of like the landscaper. Some landscapers, it's during landscaping season, and as soon as frost hits, they're done. They take a break for 3 months, and then they jump back into it come springtime. Others, you know, come in and do snow removal. Like, it's not, and that one is more of a necessity, right? Like, people that go into landscaping because they love gardening, they love, like, what it creates. I don't really think snow removal is, like, something that they're super passionate about, but it pays the bills. Sure. In order to be able to get back into it come springtime. But, and like, both options are not a bad thing. It's just depends on what it is that you want to do. And so if it gets, you know, so to your question about, like, if it gets to the point where, like, at what point are you shifting so much that you're now doing it out of necessity or shutting down? Like, that is completely up to the entrepreneur, because they, you know, some folks are okay with landscaping during the, you know, spring and summer and autumn, and then snow removal in the winter, nothing in the winter, or doing something completely random, right? Like, maybe they're door dashing in the winter because they don't want to do snow removal. But doing it, you know, having that seasonal business works for them.
Sure.
And if it gets to the point where it doesn't work, I mean, that's a decision that I think many folks got to make during the pandemic. You know, whether it's because, like, for multiple reasons, you haven't shifted enough, or, you know, you have outgrown your clientele, or your clientele has outgrown you. You know, it's always a decision of the entrepreneur as to what's going to happen next. But ultimately, it comes down to whatever it is that they want to do. I mean, I know that's kind of a lame answer. But it's I mean, that's the beauty of entrepreneurship, is you can shift as much as you want. And then if it no longer serves you and you would rather do something else, like, there are so many folks that I've seen that do entrepreneurship for years and then decide, you know what, I'm done with this. For whatever reason, I want to jump back into corporate, or I want to go work for another small business. And they do that but the beauty is that they're able to.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that's something that, like, as folks start businesses, like, nothing is forever. It doesn't have to be forever. You can start this cookie business now. And if I had a client who was a successful baker. And when she closed, it wasn't because she wasn't doing well or anything like that. She was just tired of it, tired of the hours, tired of, while she loved what she did, she didn't want that schedule anymore. She didn't want that life anymore. And it was, you know, it was better for her to walk away and go in and try something new than to keep at it, you know? And so as you're launching these things, like, it's not, nothing is forever. I mean, the same way, I think there's, like, this, entrepreneurship is risky, like, of course. And so is anything else in life, like, kind of to your point, like, if you're going to put, if you, want a relationship, you got to put yourself out there. And it's also the same thing with a job. People think, you know, like, I think the misconception is that, you know, having a job, having a 9-to-5 job is stable. It, you know, it's comfortable. And, like, yes, technically, I mean, you are definitely getting paid whether you're sick or, like, whether you call off sick or not, you go on vacation, right? You have all these benefits, but it's also not super stable, where if a business you know, corporation, small business, government, whatever it is, if they're not doing well and they need to cut costs, you can be a cost that they cut, right?
That's right.
It's just everything has its risks, and entrepreneurship is risky, but the upside as to what you're able to create with that, you know, it's really a matter of the lifestyle that you want to lead.
And I think that going back to the example of the person, you know, who's a baker, decided it wasn't for her anymore, but how many marketable skills did she create for the experience, right? And how much did that up-level her as a human being? And yeah. I know that I'm just talking about myself here, but since beginning my own entrepreneurial pursuits, I have had to level up multiple times as a human being. And that has made me not only more marketable in a job market, but has also just attracted relationships and connections. And I am able to show up bigger, more brightly in the world just as a human being for the experience of taking myself on in this way.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage anybody listening to this who has an idea, even if you think it's crazy or couldn't possibly work, what's the worst that could happen if you just go for it and share it? Maybe, like you said, go to a couple of entrepreneurial networking events and mm-hmm. you know, just discuss it with people and see where you can take it next.
Can I say something to that point?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, my sisters and I, we had our organic baby food company, which, you know, we were in Whole Foods, we were doing really well. And I mean, I hated every moment of it, because for those of you that know me personally, the last thing I want to do is be in the kitchen cooking. And so great idea to start a food-based business where we're going to be in the kitchen a lot to start out. And so, you know, when it came time to, when we made the decision to close it versus selling it, I felt a lot of shame around it for a long time. Like, how can I be a business advisor? Right. This was my side gig, you know, this organic baby food company. And I felt so much embarrassment, shame around having made the decision to shut it down. And it didn't happen right away. But ultimately, what I've realized from that experience is that experience for me wasn't about being, you know, the next, I can't think of a, I was gonna say the next Jenny's of baby food, but I don't know, not everyone may understand that reference. Jenny's ice cream here locally, although she's like, you know, branching out. My journey wasn't to become like the next big name in baby food. It was to take that experience and everything that I learned from it. First and foremost, use it with my business clients moving forward as to, you know, what to do, what not to do. But then it's also, as I've opened other businesses, it's using that experience to not make the same mistakes again. And so I haven't, and I've had, like, I now have successful businesses because of what I learned from there. And so, like, I want to encourage folks that even if your first shot at entrepreneurship doesn't work, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're not cut out for entrepreneurship. It could be a variety of reasons as to why it didn't work. And if you want to try again, try again. Like, learn, take what you learned from that experience and use it to your next experience, you know, or if, like, you know, like, see what you said, like, if you're going into something else and, like, all of this experience, all that you can then use to, you know, in a job that also works. You know, entrepreneurship is something where you can do, you know, it's prepare yourself as best as you can. And sometimes it's kind of also a crapshoot. You have people with zero experience, making it big from sheer luck, from having, you know, surrounded themselves with people, being at the right place at the right time, and like just being lucky in this life, in this entrepreneurship journey. And then you have the exact opposite, where like people that did everything that they were supposed to, they did it all. They did it like, it was like on paper, it's all perfect, yet it doesn't work out. There's so many external factors to be successful in entrepreneurship that all you can do is like take the experience, learn whatever lesson you're meant to learn from it, and like use it for the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to piggyback on what you're saying, you know, I don't make any claims to being a super successful entrepreneur, but what I know to be true is that you talk about being lucky, getting lucky. You don't have the opportunity to get lucky if you don't show up.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like you need to show up, do the work, put in a good faith effort to make the thing happen to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
And to your point about when it doesn't work out, you know, I know you know this as well, like results are feedback, right? Mm-hmm. It's data. Think of it as data for what did or did not work, what could have been done differently. And I think and what I heard you say is that the challenge here, when things go awry, the sales numbers don't hit, the product launch is a failure, the new store opening doesn't get any traffic, blah, 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 whatever the thing is, not making it like a truth about yourself.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is that, again, the data is external. It happened for whatever reason.
Yeah.
By keeping it external from you, you can look at it objectively and then get back in the game, reiterate upon what did or didn't work and keep going. But yeah, when we internalize it, I failed, therefore I'm a failure.
Yeah.
That's when we shut ourselves down. And so, I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can do everything right and still not be successful, you know, and it's the opportunity is to see, like, as a business owner, you get to work in the business, right? So like, that's like the 9 to 5 day to day, paying the bills, doing the thing, but then also reminding yourself to like, take a step back and work on the business, right? So like, mm-hmm, both from a micro level, like day to day, and then taking a step back and working on the business on a macro level. So like taking a step back and looking at, okay, these are my results. Not like, absolutely not making it about me, like not taking it personally, and it's feedback. So where do I get to shift? What worked, what didn't work, right? Like taking a step back and looking at the business to say, what's working, what's not working. What's working, you know, X, Y, and Z. What's not working is maybe I'm putting too many expenses into the business right now. We can't technically afford it. Or, you know, I'm not charging enough here because it's a self-worth conversation. It's always like charging in your business is always a self-worth conversation. I've rarely been around clients that are overcharging, right? It's always like, okay, if I charge this amount and I'm going to have razor thin margins and maybe, mm-hmm, I can make it work, or it's actually a really expensive hobby because I'm not making any money because I'm not willing to charge, yeah, what I'm worth. And like, of course it's a balance, right? Like I could think I'm worth $300 an hour. And if if my target market says no, either one, I get to find, like, I get to assess, is my target market accurate? Or two, do I get to change my pricing based on my target market? Like, there's something off. And that's the feedback. That's like taking a step back and saying, is my target market accurate? Is my pricing accurate? are my expenses? You know, what do I want to pay myself? What do I, you know, what else do I need? Pricing is always, it's always a thing with entrepreneurs, you know, and that when you're figuring pricing out, that is key to getting someone that will work with you and not be personally attached to what you're up to, so that they can give you neutral, honest feedback as to, you know, you're underpricing yourself, you're overpricing yourself. Mm-hmm. Like I just ran into a friend's mom who's selling earrings for like 10 bucks a pop. So, I mean, you start going through expenses, I can't believe she's making any money.
Yeah.
She's at best covering her expenses, at best. And so like, if that's what she wants to do, like this is just a hobby where she enjoys doing it. And as long as all of her expenses are covered, she's at peace. I mean, fine. And, you know, talk about not valuing your time, your worth, you know.
So how do you coach your clients around the self-worth conversation, particularly for the folks who are charging themselves? So how do you coach your clients on overcoming that self-worth conversation when they are charging way too low for their goods or services?
Yeah. I mean, it's sometimes it's one conversation, sometimes it's multiple conversations. Usually, first and foremost, I have them look at it just like from like completely analytically. Let's go through your numbers. Let's go through your expenses and tell me what it's costing you to have your business. So what's your break-even number? Not counting paying yourself. And then from there, how much do you want to make? Adding that in and then factoring the price. And then there's always pushback, some pushback more than others, but then it's the conversation. We always have the self-worth conversation, and then the action step is to put it into play. So once we figured out what their price point gets to be, putting it out, you know, does it look like raising price by 10%, 20%? But then it becomes a marketing. If it's, you know, if it's suddenly you're increasing pricing by 20%, you know, is it 0 to 20%, or is it, you know, over time you're going to increase it so that you get your customers? It depends on the business, right? Because if it's something where you're like producing something consistently and suddenly you're increasing your price for everyone, that's kind of more of a gradual step versus if you're doing something like consulting, where you have your existing business, you know, your existing clients at this rate, and any new business that you bring in, you're bringing in at the new rate. And then when these contracts expire, the understanding of then you're increasing the rate so that everyone ends up in the same rate. And having the conversation of like, why are you in business? Is this a business or is this a hobby? If you are at peace with not making any money or making very little money, where this will always be a side hustle and you won't necessarily be able to do it full time, like that's your decision.
Yeah.
But if it's also something that you want to consistently grow so that you're able to support yourself, you're able to support your family, what is it going to take? What do you need to make? And if your current clientele isn't willing to pay that, like if you need to make X in order for you to flourish and like even just be financially stable, like I'm not even talking about like, you know, money raining down every month from all of your business. I mean, that's also a possibility, right? But like even just to be stable, you get to make X amount of money. Having the conversation with clients to say, you know, you perhaps have outgrown your current clientele. If they're not willing to pay it, that's okay. right? Like, again, going back to your target market, who is your target market? And if they're not willing to pay it, like thanking them for the time that they spent with you and looking to see what's next for your business, right? Like, as you're growing, you may outgrow people, you may outgrow clients, and that's okay. Because, you know, theoretically, your target market exists. So now it's a matter of shifting your marketing so that you're reaching them.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. And I feel like I could keep asking you questions on this subject and just keep this conversation going. But, you know, we unfortunately don't have the luxury of endless time, but people can continue the conversation with you if they are entrepreneurs, or even if they just have an idea or a dream that they would love to get some feedback on. So where are the best places for them to connect with you, Ariana?
I'm on Instagram, Ariana Desiree Coaching. I'll send that to you because it's kind of a mouthful. And then the same on Facebook. I'm always in there. And like, reach out, send me a message, and I'm always happy to connect and point you in the right direction so that you can get your entrepreneurship dream going. Because it's, like I said, small businesses are the key, like, are the lifeblood of our economy. And so, you know, we can always use a new small business to provide a product or service that, you know, is unique to you that people are going to want. Like, why not?
Yeah. And folks, maybe just a quick anecdote to Ariana's last point. When I worked at the New York Yankees, we all had these really nice magnetic name badges that had the Yankees logo, the classic NY, and our first name. The company we got those from was a mom and pop operation in Queens. And I'm not kidding you, the email address was @gmail. Yeah. So if an organization like the New York Yankees is going to rely entirely on a mom and pop operation, probably working out of their apartment somewhere in Queens for something like that, that's critical to enhancing the brand for guests and the company itself. There's no reason you can't have a major impact as well, just by jumping in and planting your flag on what you have to offer.
Yeah. Oh, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
As you launch your business, for minority, women, veteran, or LGBTQ owned businesses, there are certain certifications that exist so that as you grow and you're looking to work, you know, to land a contract with a government, or to Stu's point, a large organization, a lot of those organizations have goals to work with minority, women, LGBTQ, veteran-owned businesses. But it's not enough for you to just like show up at the door and be like, look, I'm a woman, therefore count me as a woman-owned business. Like, you're required to go through a certification process. And so if and when you're ready to look into that now, I'm also happy to point you into the, you know, in the right direction of certifications that will support you in growing. I mean, these certifications, ultimately what they come down to is taking your business to that next level, you know, working with the larger corporations, with government, with those that have those, you know, those goals that they want to support minority and women and LGBTQ and veteran-owned businesses. So that's all.
So if it hasn't been made clear yet, y'all, Ariana is an absolute font of knowledge, particularly in the small business space, but she's also a pretty awesome life coach as well. So hit her up for anything that you got in that regard as well, to help you up-level your goals and your dreams also. Final question for you, Ariana. I ask this of all my guests. What are you acknowledging yourself for today?
Oof. This one's a personal one. My ex-husband got married over the weekend. And I'm acknowledging myself for where we are in our friendship, in our relationship. You know, I'm remarried, he's remarried now. And we have both found the relationships of our dreams while also maintaining a friendship, 'cause it's important. I mean, we were friends before we got married, and we now have kids, and we will always be tied to each other. And so why not be friends in the process? And so him getting married this weekend was kind of the culmination of years of working to get to this point. So that's what I'm watching myself for.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. And so, folks, you know, again, this has been another episode of Your Inside Track to Success. Again, I'm your host, Stuart Kreintz. And please, 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 if you got any value from today's episode, please share with a friend. Please add a comment below so that we know what your biggest takeaways were. If you have questions for Ariana, you can hit her up on social media. Her tags, handles on Instagram will be included in the show notes below. And quite honestly, guys, this is a program put on to support you in creating the life of your dreams. So we can only get this information out as far as you're willing to help share it. So thank you all again. Again, I am your host, Stuart Kreintz. We'll catch you next week.